Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to the CBSSports.com College Football Podcast. I am Chip Patterson, and we are just days away from the kickoff of the 2012 regular season, which means it's time to take all of the general predictions and prognostications and throw them away because we got to get specific. We need answers. And so joining me on the line today is Paul Bessier, General Manager of PredictionMachine.com. Paul, I know you're very busy right now, so I appreciate you taking some time to hop on the podcast.
No problem, Aaron. Man, I can talk football all the time. It might be what I do anyway, but I have absolutely no problem talking football to anybody.
You and me both. That's exactly the way I feel. Now, one cool thing about PredictionMachine.com is it is the home of the Predictilator, which is 50,000 simulations of every game, and they use that information in order to do analysis and create probabilities of different outcomes. And I want to just start, Paul, if you don't mind, by sort of giving us a little bit of an idea of what goes into the Predictilator and some of the what makes it unique from other simulation machines.
Sure. Well, I mean, simulation itself, I think, is the most accurate, or at least the most all-encompassing way to come up with predictions or prognostications, as you alluded to earlier, on any sporting event. Because sports is all about using one's strengths to exploit one another's weaknesses, and while trying to cover up or at least hide some of your own weaknesses and keeping them from being exploited. My point with that is that in our simulations, we at least allow for all 22 players that we assume to be on the field to interact. And we layer in the coaching staff, the weather, the home field advantage, obviously playing a big role in college sports, and come up with what is the most likely result based on 50,000 iterations of each game. Now, the simulation itself is kind of like a choose-your-own-adventure. A quarterback might get the ball after the kickoff originally, and he can take the snap and either run or pass. There's a probability of either happening. And then it goes on from there. We draw about 20,000 random numbers over the course of the entire game just to come up with the result of one game. We play the entire game 50,000 times and see some results. Fortunately, we've been pretty accurate, especially overall over the last couple of seasons that we've had this published with the information that we can kind of derive from this. Looking into this season now, we've simulated the entire season 50,000 times, and after all that I just mentioned, it still only takes about a minute or so to do all the college football games for a year and get some kind of valuable information out of it.
So this is all 124 FBS teams, all the schedules, and all of this only takes 1 minute to get everything going.
Exactly. And then I think maybe the most interesting thing we do is actually our power rankings, where it's very different from other power rankings. I'm not trying to project. I think that in pollsters' minds, there's always two different kind of combating ideas. There's who's good and how good are they, and there's who's going to be really good at the end of the season or who's going to have the better schedule at the end of the season or better record at the end of the season. For us, we don't worry about that at all. We simulate all 124 teams against each other 50,000 times to come up with who would be who, and what does the hierarchy of that look like to come up with our power rankings. So I think that would be the most unique and probably coolest thing we do to show off from those simulations exactly where teams fare against each other.
Right, not who is the best team in college football, but who will win the national championship, which is really cool because it leads me to my next question, which is, you've got in the recently calculated odds to win the BCS national championship, you've got Southern California at number one at 3-1, Alabama at 5-1, LSU at 6-1, and I know one thing that you say on the site is a lot of that is a perfect example of how you don't actually have USC as the top team in your power ranking, but because of everything in the SEC where you've got three teams projecting for double-digit wins, you know, that's why their odds are different than their projection, right?
Exactly. That's the thing. And that's the difference between that. Because I think a lot of people in the pollsters, when they vote USC number one, it's because they look at their schedule and they say this team is very likely to be in the national championship game. They don't necessarily believe, I think at least not in all cases, that Alabama and LSU are worse than and the other 121 other schools are worse than USC, but they think that USC is going to end up being there. But ours is very different because I think Alabama and LSU are both better than USC. I think that Georgia is at least on par with USC, and I think Oklahoma is even in that conversation. But the most likely team by far in all of college football right now to end the regular season undefeated is the USC Trojans, because the schedule is much easier than what you see from Alabama and LSU. It may not be easier than what you see from Georgia, but then Georgia would have to go on to the SEC championship to play one of those two teams, or Arkansas, which none of those teams do they have to face during the regular season, and that could cause them some problems, because they wouldn't be favored in those games, at least according to our numbers as of right now. So there is a distinction there. If you're asking me who's the most likely team to win the BCS championship, it's USC, and I have no problem saying that. But if you're asking me if the SEC right now is more likely than the Pac-12 to produce the national champion, I think that's true. I think the SEC is obviously by far the better conference, more likely to have the national champion. And with 8 of our top 20 teams, it's extremely, extremely likely, more than 50% likely in our numbers, that we end up with one SEC team at least in the national championship game.
Do you feel as though I almost wish that we could replace preseason polls with some type of prediction or simulation if the predictilator could do it? Because it's just what you said. When we're deciding where teams go, there is two different thoughts of, you know, are we going to put this team out there in front because we think they'll win or because we think they're the best team? And then you're dealing with a voting group that doesn't necessarily take into consideration all these different biases. A lot of it, you know, might just be whoever was in the preseason magazines, whoever, you know, they're using a very few amount of resources. And the predictilator, doesn't it take into consideration almost everything, tons of different resources and angles?
I love to say that it takes into account anything relevant. I've heard people in the past say things like intangibles or heart or whatever the case may be, that they think that it is not trackable. But I look at these numbers, and there has to be some reason why any team wins at any given point in time, and anything along those lines is factored into our numbers. And I'm looking at I know for the most part, 85 players on 124 different rosters, plus what's going on in the NFL right now, we're paying attention to that, and we have our expectations as to who's playing in each one of those games. So all 22 players we're trying to get right that are on the field at any given time. So I would say this is a very good way to set up the season in terms of who's going to be good and at least where everybody kind of falls in the hierarchy. That's also true during the course of the season. But I understand the point of the BCS in that at the end of the season, the goal is that the two most deserving teams, and deserving is different than best, but the two most deserving teams play for the national championship. And in that case, we wouldn't carry as much weight as what the BCS currently does, because we're going to tell you who the two best are, whether they're deserving or not at that point, because there might have been a fluke loss or something along those lines.
You've got, as I mentioned before, Alabama at 5-1, LSU at 6-1, then Florida State at 13-2, Oklahoma and Oregon at 10-1. Below that line, is there any team that stands out to you as a good dark horse pick to maybe overcome the odds and win the BCS title?
Well, I think it's extremely likely that both of the participants comes from the group of seven that you just essentially identified there: Alabama, LSU, USC, Georgia, Oklahoma, and Florida State. I think Oregon is the other team that I have on the list. From that group of seven, it's extremely likely that two of the teams come from that. So I think you're going to be in the national championship. But based on both their profile, or based on the profile of their schedules and obviously the talent on that team. West Virginia is the next best team in terms of what I'm looking at in our rankings. Obviously, they're going to get Oklahoma at home, so they've got a chance to win that game right there, and I think that's a pretty critical opportunity for that team. You know, there are long shots upon long shots, but I've narrowed it down to about 27 total teams that I think even remotely have a chance. And even though that number may not sound very large out of the 124-team pool, it ends with teams like BYU, South Florida, Clemson, Tennessee, some teams that most normal fans right now wouldn't give a whole lot of a chance at this point. So I would be shocked if it's anybody outside of that 27 I've alluded to and identified on the site. And I would still be very surprised if both of the participants are outside of that original group of seven that I think are clearly the top seven teams in terms of what they can do this season, what we'd expect out of them at the end of the year.
Yeah, I don't think anybody could give me money that I would put on Boston College, even at 500-1.
Exactly.
Well, you take a look at also giving some Heisman odds, and I was just curious to ask you, what goes into that? Because, of course, we've got our own Heisman pundit, Chris Houston, and he has sort of his own formula, and I was curious to see maybe how yours compared or the way that you look at the race.
Well, the way I look at the race is that with all of college sports, it's a lot more difficult than with professional sports. In professional sports, I know that at the end of the season, based on what we projected is going to happen, we know exactly who's going to make the playoffs. In college football, it's impossible to do that. In college basketball, it's impossible to do that. No matter where they finish, doesn't necessarily mean that the two teams that we have in our power rankings is best, or of the three teams that we might project as being likely to go undefeated. We don't know because of the pollsters, et cetera, what's going to happen from those numbers and who's going to end up at which bowls, et cetera. We just have to kind of speculate and guess. Because the Harris poll and the coaches poll don't get into each one of their minds, and with the computer models, they don't have to divulge that information as to what goes behind that. Some of that I can figure some of it out. But my point is that because of all of that, there is the extra now question and kind of fuzziness around what it means to be a Heisman Trophy winner, because we can look at the performance of the players on the field, but we don't know exactly how it's going to translate and how the voters are going to appreciate that relative to their team's chances to make a BCS bowl. When it's all said and done, if we have USC as the team most likely to win a championship, they've got the best receiving core in the country and four offensive linemen returning, it'd be very difficult for me to say that anybody besides Matt Barkley is the favorite, and I feel pretty comfortable with him as the favorite. After that, you kind of pick and choose from who we think is going to be successful and who people know going into the season from last year.
That's right, and that's why Monte Ball at 6-1, Denard Robinson at 15-2, both players that, you know, Monte Ball, obviously a Heisman finalist, and Denard Robinson, you know, seemingly always pops up into the discussion at the beginning of the season, and then, you know, there's something a little shaky, and, you know, he'll have a chance right away to put himself at the front of that race as Michigan kicks off the season against Alabama in the Cowboys Classic down in Arlington. Right now, they've got that almost as a 12.5-point spread. Paul, you know, lets all of his picks out on Wednesday, right, on PredictionMachine.com?
Yeah, Wednesday at 8 o'clock is when you see that, but I've run that game enough and talked about it enough that I've apparently got an idea for it. I think, and to the original point, I think Denard Robinson will be able to put up numbers here. I actually envision it being a pretty high-scoring game. And if you're talking about what Vegas thinks, I think the line's probably appropriate. We've got it as about a 31-20 game. I'm rounding a lot there, so I don't think there's a great edge for Michigan being a team that is going to keep it within that 13. It could easily fall right around two touchdowns. I think that's fair. What I don't think is fair is that for what was originally a 42-point kind of total line, the expectation of the sum of the combined points there, it's moved up to 45, and we actually have it as even a higher scoring game than that. I think at this point in the seasons, and it will be different at the end of the year, but at this point in the seasons, with all the returning offensive playmakers that are available for Alabama and Michigan, I think they're a little further ahead than the defensive playmakers, and I think this game will be played because of what Michigan wants to do at a little bit higher tempo than you normally see out of Alabama games. There will be enough of those kind of magical fluke, if you will, Denard Robinson plays, that if Alabama is going to win by 14 points, they're going to have to score into the 30s or so to do so, and we do like it as a pretty high-scoring game. Technically, 69.9% of the time is how often Alabama wins it. They win pretty comfortably, but it should be still exciting and a higher-scoring affair than we've seen in most Alabama games recently.
Do you think that whether Fitz Toussaint's availability, does that go into the decision, or is Denard Robinson and sort of the having Roundtree available and the rest of the offense important that it doesn't matter whether he plays or not?
It certainly does, and that is important because it's garbage in, garbage out. If we're using the wrong rosters and we don't get those 22 players right, or if we don't get the critical players right, then that's a problem. And we've recently added the ability on our site to see exactly who we are removed from games. And if you check out the site at any point over the last few days since we launched that, you would not see Fitz Toussaint's name there. Now, that was a guess on my part. I mean, that name's too big. I am not speaking by any means to his act, but with the massive implications of that game so early in the season, I figured that things might break his way or break the team's way to allow them to play in that game. And we have very recently learned, in terms of this conversation, that his charges have been reduced, and that probably means there's a better chance for him to play. I was waiting to hear something definitive before I removed him from the game. I'll keep him in the game here and expect that he's still going to play until I hear otherwise. But I think that would make a difference in terms of that overall line. It would probably be about a 35-20 game, or maybe a little bit, maybe a few points less for Michigan, so maybe a 31-17 game or so, closer to that 14-point line, more toward Alabama's favor. But it's still going to be a game Alabama wins that we think is higher scoring than otherwise.
I wanted to ask you about two more specific games. We got on Thursday, we kick off with a great SEC East battle, South Carolina traveling to Nashville to play Vandy. The Gamecocks, ranked in the AP Top 10, are currently 7-point favorites in Vegas. You know, how do you sort of see that one playing out? What's the predictor telling you?
Yeah, and that 7's come down. I've seen it at 7.5 at some point. It's come all the way down to 6.5 at some point. And that's a huge jump to make, because if you think of a natural football game, you know, that 7-point outcome is very likely because that's a touchdown. So if each score is a similar amount and then South Carolina tacks on a touchdown, that could flip a lot of money in different ways than it might have been flipped over the course of the last couple weeks. I don't think that number is appropriate anyway. No matter how much I want to expound on that, I think this is closer to a field goal game. Now, we do still have South Carolina winning, but they're going on the road. Don't love Vandy's home field advantage, but they still have to go on the road to open the season. Connor Shaw should be a little bit better. I'm not sure what to expect out of Marcus Lattimore because he wasn't the most efficient running back beforehand. But we do like a low-scoring, close game. It's, as I mentioned, South Carolina wins by around a field goal. 21-18 is the average score. That means 21-17. Something around there is likely to be the outcome of this game. And I think it'll be close and interesting throughout. 60% of the time, South Carolina wins that game straight up. But if you're looking at that odds, the line's right around 7. Vandy keeps it within that about 58% of the time, which I feel pretty comfortable about.
Yeah, that, it's interesting you said that. And people talk about heart or whatever. The James Franklin was on College Football 360 this morning with Bruce Feldman and Kevin Cork, and he said the way that the Commodores are going about it, every single game is their Super Bowl. And while there's not a huge home field advantage, the way that he's proven that he can turn around that program, and from what we've seen by sort of his moxie, you've got to believe that the Commodores are at least going to fight until the very, very end. And the Gamecocks are going to have to prove that they can score in bunches, which I'm not sure that they can right now, in order to be able to cover that spread.
Yeah, I certainly agree with everything you just said. I think this is a defensive battle. I think that the both defenses are a little bit better than the offenses. The concern for South Carolina is in the secondary right now, and I think Jordan Rodgers makes enough of an improvement to keep this game close and score a couple touchdowns that keeps it within that line. And as you mentioned, the Vanderbilt team is a team that I have a lot of respect for. Now, we still are only projecting a 6-6 season for this team. And 2 years ago, if I said that about a Vanderbilt team, I think all the Commodores fans would jump on board. But with what Franklin did so quickly, I think they might have got a little bit ahead of themselves. There's 15 starters returning. I like what I see out of Rodgers. The defense looks like it's going to be the strength again this season. But this is not a team that's yet in the class of the elite in the SEC. It might be able to keep games close against South Carolina. But when it has to go to Georgia, even after your 2 Georgia later in the season, I think there could certainly be some concerns, not to mention home against Florida and playing in the SEC in general, playing against their in-state rival Tennessee. All of those teams seem to be a little bit better, especially given the venues in which they're going to have to play those games.
Another big game that we've got heading into the first football Saturday is a Friday night game. You got Joe Southwick, who's going to be taking Kellen Moore's spot under center for the Boise State Broncos, traveling to East Lansing to face Michigan State. I've got it jotted down in my notes as a 7-point spread in Vegas. What are you seeing out of this this Kellen Moore-less, you know, first time in 4 years that they're going to be without college football's all-time winningest quarterback? What is the Predictolator sort of expecting out of the Broncos in this game and on the season in general?
Well, and Kellen Moore wasn't really in that different of a situation when he joined the team 4 years ago. So that's something to keep in mind with this Chris Peterson-led Boise State team. And even if you look at Southwick, he's a short kid from a small town on the West Coast to the coach's kid who put up some decent numbers and wasn't really highly recruited coming out of college. The difference with him, though, is that even though he hasn't thrown a meaningful pass in the college football, he is a junior and he's been around that system for a while. He doesn't have his brother, like Kellen Moore did, to help him out. But I'm not sure it's necessarily going to matter. Even though both quarterbacks here are new to starting quarterbacks at the FBS level, MSU's team around them is significantly better. It's on the defensive side of the ball, where Boise State only has 2 returning starters, where I would be concerned at this point of the season. I have the utmost respect for Chris Peterson and what he does, but given this venue, given as good as Michigan State's defense looks going into the season, that's going to be the difference in this game. I don't love a ton of points in this, and I think Vegas has responded. The line has come down 4.5 points since a week ago in terms of the total, but I do still think the Michigan State wins this game pretty handily. Around 27-17 is our predicted score. That's closer to a 10-point margin than obviously than that 7-point seed. We like Michigan State to win almost 60% of the time straight up in the numbers. We are, and I should mention this, we have been consistently in favor of Boise State at the very least to cover in the scenarios in which they've taken on competition for BCS conferences, but they're just in such a difficult spot this year so early in the season. I just don't see it working their way in prime time, if you will, for a hot spotlight game against a very good opponent.
Right. And last season, one thing, I also have a ton of respect for Chris Peterson, especially his impeccable record when he's had more than a week to prepare for a big game and in these season openers. And we saw it last year against Georgia when they just came out there and embarrassed one of the biggest offensive lines in the SEC, just hounding and hounding Aaron Murray. And I think that missing all those defensive starters is going to be tough, especially with Michigan State. They've still got Le'Veon Bell there, and I also see Michigan State winning it pretty handily and getting it done on the ground against that Broncos defense.
Certainly. I mean, they had four senior starters who were multiple-year starters on the defensive line last year. I believe all four of those guys are doing something in the NFL right now. Not all of them were top picks, but they're all on rosters. I think at least it's still at this point. So that's something to pay attention to there, because those four guys aren't there anymore. And we've still got them at 9-3 as the 28th best team in the country, and not necessarily easily winning the Mountain West in their one season in that conference. But between Boise State and Nevada, both of those teams, I think, are the class of that conference. The two teams that are going to stand out well above the rest, and then of course Boise State goes a separate way a year later.
Now, Paul, you were a sports writer, right? Correct.
I've done a lot of things in this space. I've worked for 9 years as a professional, I guess, projecting fantasy statistics and writing about that, and in addition to that, projecting both college football and NFL games. And now, even with the site that I started myself, PredictionMachine.com, handling MLB, NBA, college basketball, and NHL, in addition to all those sports. So a lot of that's based on the simulation engine that spits that out. But I have my core is in a finance background, but at least being able to articulate what some of that same concept means as it applies to sports.
Well, okay, well then maybe I can ask you this as just a fan. What is one thing that you're really looking forward to seeing develop in the upcoming 2012 season, whether it's a storyline, a player, a team, something where you're not quite sure and you're genuinely intrigued to see how it plays out?
Well, I have my own personal biases when it comes to that. So as a fan, I'm very intrigued to see what happens to Wisconsin in a division it better win. But I grew up with season tickets to that team. I think they take a step back at quarterback, but otherwise could be a very good team. That's going to be the personal response I have. I'm also a Cincinnati alum, so that team in a very winnable Big East is a team that I'll be paying attention to, especially with a guy like Munchie Legault as a starting quarterback. But if I take a step back and look at the national landscape, I think what's very fascinating to me is two different things. Florida State, first of all, a team that is approaching the talent level again of being a team that could rattle off several years, maybe not 14 in a row, but several years of top five finishes in a row and could be a national championship contender. We got this team at 10-2, and a lot of people loved him going into last year. I think this is the year, if there's going to be any year in recent memory, that the Florida State Seminoles have the best chance of winning the national championship. So if the ACC could do anything, I think I'm really intrigued to see what might happen there. And then more of a general theme for the season are the non-BCS teams. And we saw Houston, we saw Boise State, we see TCU now that joins the Big 12, we see Southern Miss. The three teams besides TCU that I just mentioned that were very good non-BCS teams last year turn over their quarterback and their head coach this season. And then UCF, which might be the next best team outside of those teams from a non-BCS standpoint, is not eligible for a bowl. So I'm curious to see if there's going to be any team outside of a BCS outside of the BCS conferences that even ranks in the top 25 at the end of the season, because I'm not sure there is. And if I look at our projections right now, we don't have anybody above Boise State at number 28 that comes from outside of the BCS automatic qualifiers.
He is Paul Basir. You can follow him on Twitter at Predict Machine, and all of the picks will be available at 8 o'clock tomorrow for week one on PredictionMachine.com. Paul, I really appreciate you taking the time to hop on the CBSSports.com College Football Podcast. And if you don't mind, I'd love to have you back so we can chat some more spreads in the future.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, man.
Appreciate it. Just a reminder, you can get this and all of the CBSSports.com College Football Podcast for free at iTunes. You can find all the episodes, or you can subscribe, and we'll deliver the new ones as soon as they're available. Be sure to check back with us on Thursday and every Thursday for the CBSSports.com Weekend Picks panel. This week, I'll be joined by Bruce Feldman, Jerry Hinnan, and Tom Fornelli as we take all of the top 25 games in week one and pick them straight up and against the spread. Thanks so much for tuning in.